This video is brought to you by Holocasa. Our tool transforms independent local real estate agents to global real estate agents. Create your own profile for free and get contacted by international investors. Sign up with the link in the description.
Hello and welcome everyone to our 114th session of Holocasa. My name is Michael and today I'm talking to Haley Beller from New York City in the USA. Haley is a licensed real estate agent with Oxford Property Group and handles both commercial and residential real estate transactions. Haley, thank you so much for being on the show. I'm always pumped to have people from New York City on the show. Why don't you introduce yourself to our audience?
Thank you so much. I'm very happy to be here. As you mentioned, I am here in New York City. I primarily work in both Manhattan and Brooklyn. I like to do commercial, but also it's New York, so everybody's always moving. So you got to do some residential in there too.
Perfect. Yeah. Prior to our call, you said right now New York City is quite hot. A lot of things are moving, residential rentals, but also residential transactions. What is it right now, summer 2023 like?
Summertime in New York is always particularly crazy. And so anything that is remotely affordable, which I know affordability is in the eye of the wallet holder, but things can go pretty crazy. Like I have a client who she has like a smaller budget for New York, specifically for New York, because I know $2,000 a month anywhere else is not small, but for New York it is. And I've been trying really hard to find her a place. And even this morning, a place got posted at 9:30. And by the time I heard back at like 11, it was already like snatched up. So
how do you handle those situations? Do you have any secret sauce to make sure like, okay, I have to be there. I have to know everyone. I have to be basically like already on top of everything in order to know what is getting listed, know some mm-hmm. backdoors. Is there anything you do better than the others in order to have like direct access to certain listings?
I really try and not just look at like Street Easy, which from Street Easy or the typical listing platforms, because that's where like everybody goes, right? And so I will reach out to units on there because I need to reach out to everybody, but ultimately it's a numbers game. So I have a couple of resources that I use that some of them, like I'd be happy to talk about. One I don't want to talk about because not too many people use it, and I don't want to put it out there to then have them snatched up, but it's really just a numbers game. So I have a number of sites that I will go through and try and like actively reach out to people.
Does it imply that you also, that you're mainly a buyer's agent or are you both buyer's and seller's agent?
I can do both, but I've primarily been a buyer's agent.
Okay. Since COVID, how has the market price been developing? Been up again? Maybe you can segment that into residential and commercial. How the development has been.
So in 2021, it started to gradually bounce back from COVID. And then last year, it was a particular free-for-all. So rates went really high. This summer is not quite at last summer's peak, so it's not as expensive or necessarily as crazy as it was last year, but it is still pretty costly. However, when I'm looking at listings from like last year for the same apartment, it hasn't gone up drastically like it would have done last year from the year before.
Where does the demand come from primarily? Is that domestic? Is it domestic New Jersey? Is it domestic New York? Is it domestic USA? Or is it even international?
I'm sorry, you said where does what come from?
The demand of the client base.
Everybody's moving to or from New York, it seems. A lot of it comes from jobs. And so the reason why summer is particularly crazy is not only students that are trying to move to the city or people that are moving to the city because they just graduated, so now they have a new job, but also it's actually very common for like, there are a lot of big law firms here. And so a lot of those companies, since the bar exam is end of July, they usually have like a September start date at their firm. And so because of that, they then need to move to the city like towards the end of summer. So yeah, it's really like work and students that tends to bring a lot of people here.
Makes total sense. What can I imagine as a rent for, let's say, a single Do I need a room? Can I go for an apartment? Do I have to live outside of the Big Apple? Do I have to go super upstate? What is there on the market?
That depends on the budget. Like, I ran a quick search before we hopped on a call, and if you have like a $2,000 budget in Manhattan in particular, there are maybe 60 available units. But mind you, that's if you are living alone in at least a studio. And then if you have a budget of up to like 3,000, then all of a sudden there's like almost 1,200 units available. So like, if you have a less than $2,000 budget, it's going to be a little bit harder, and you're going to have to like really make sure you have your paperwork, you are prepared. So if you see a unit you like, you can snag it quickly. But if you're looking for just a room, if you're open to like Brooklyn or Queens, then you can probably find a room for like closer to like 1500. It just depends on what areas you're looking in, and yeah.
And the 2K and the 3K were Big Apple plus Brooklyn.
It was just Manhattan.
Just Manhattan, okay.
Yes.
And then the expenses, what do I have to account for? How much?
For a studio, usually like you'll have to pay your electric and then sometimes your gas. Most of the time heat and water are included. And for a studio, like I've lived in a studio since I moved here, like one smaller studio and then like now like an oversized one. And my electricity bill is like $60 a month. And my gas is maybe like 20. So overall, like those expenses don't get drastic like they would if you're in a house.
Okay, interesting. That's definitely a huge difference to Europe, where you have sometimes like a couple of $100 for heating, for example.
I'm originally from Michigan and I owned a home there. And so it was very common for it to be like up to $200, especially if it was like summer and I've been running my AC the entire time.
Yeah, I understand. Prior to our call, you mentioned that you started recently to become a real estate agent. I always like to talk to people who are basically still like somehow fresh, if I may say so, because I know about the challenges starting off. Mm-hmm. Maybe you can explain to the audience how it has been so far, the first year, and you have maybe also some tips on how to survive during the first year as an agent, mm-hmm. because you have to create your entire client base, you have to create deal flow.
Yeah. So really like the biggest thing has just been getting myself out there. And when I first moved to the city, I actually worked in tech, and I didn't really have a specific reason that I needed to network, because I had a normal 9-to-5 job, so I wasn't looking for anything. And so I had started to create a bit of a network for myself, thankfully. But then when I became a realtor and I was like, now I need to actually like really develop this network, that's when it got a little bit difficult. And I definitely, that first month, every week was its own mental roller coaster. And so like I would spend all week like gradually getting beaten down by the time like Friday hit, and I was like, I just need like this weekend to recoup. And then by the time Monday would roll around, I'd be like, okay, like I have my plan for this week, and like I'm gonna go at it. And so it's taken a while to really get myself into a groove or figure out exactly which avenues I wanted to go down. And thankfully I've had enough people that have been like very encouraging, or even random people that I've met. I remember maybe 2 months after I became a realtor, I ended up meeting someone who had just stopped being a realtor. But like they gave me great advice where they were like, just stick it out for like 6 to 9 months, because most people do not push that hard. And like, once you do, that's when you can finally see a breakthrough.
You could basically think that someone who's like in tech, maybe you, I don't know if you were a people person in tech, you had a role where you had to communicate a lot, or you were just programming and said like, don't talk to me, I just want to write code. I don't know that. Well, how was it? May I ask that, please?
Like the transition? Yeah, so I had two different positions in tech. My first one was very much people focused, because we were a two-person team for like 15 franchisees, so I was anything that they needed. And then my second position was product management. So that was primarily only dealing with like people internally at the company.
I got it. So basically it was not like such a, so much of cold water for you to get yourself out there and also to talk to people. Perfect. You also therefore focus right now primarily on rental, because I assume that the rental turnover is faster now. Mm-hmm. Also what helps you is, as you said, summertime.
Yeah.
And also the autumn with the new recruitments and, mm-hmm. and has it been turning off well?
Summer's been good. My main focus, like I mentioned before our call, is social media this summer, because I realized that is something that like I need to be very active on in order to build like a more regular referral basis, because I meet plenty of people, and if you don't have a way of like naturally keeping in contact, this is like a better way where you just kind of post something and remind them that you even exist.
How have you been doing it, and what's your plan there to make sure that you're coming up with content, you're taking the time, and you basically put out something which is engaging and not only here's a new listing and go out there? Yeah. Like, do you structure yourself creating a content marketing calendar, or what is basically mm-hmm. your approach there?
So I'm trying to do real estate focused content, but not solely real estate focused content. So that way I can like increase engagement and not be like just that super salesy person that you never really like want to listen to. And so I got great advice from a friend of mine who I did a TikTok with, and I don't really spend too much time on social media. And she was just like, I know you don't want to, but you need to, and you need to like actually like just kind of treat it like research. And so that first day after her and I talked, I spent like a few hours on TikTok and saved a bunch of audios. And if I was like, maybe I could use this for blank, I have like a draft email, which is like my version of a notepad. And it has just a bunch of description of an audio dash, maybe I can do blank. And so I've been working off of that list to create content and move forward.
How much time a week do you basically budget for that in order to make sure that you're like having enough content to put out?
So I started doing that at the beginning of this month, and I've been trying to, I went from posting like once a week to like now 2 to 3 times a week. And so my goal is to get to like 5 times a week, and, or at least 5 times a week, like on both, on across all platforms. And so thankfully, because I'm not solely doing real estate stuff, a lot of them can be like pretty quickly filmed, or it's very popular on social media to talk while you're just like walking around. So it's, I can just like step outside and like, I have 3 different video ideas that all it is like me talking. So like, perfect. I can walk down any street and talk about it.
Coming back to the real estate operations, may I ask, how is the commission being taken care of respectively? How does it work in New York City regarding rentals? Is it one time rental price, 2 times, 3 times? I know that this concept from Europe. How does it work in New York City?
So in New York, typically, if you work with a broker, there is between a 1 month fee and a 15% of the annual rent fee, which is close to 2 months, but it's just shy. Like 1 month is, I think, just over 8.5% of like of the annual rent. And so it comes out to 15%, which would be just below 2 months. And that in the summer is going to more than likely be paid by the tenant. However, in like the late fall through the winter, you see a lot more owners that are willing to pay like a 1 month broker fee. So that way, like it's less of a burden on the tenant and to like get the units moving.
Got it. Makes total sense. Apart from maybe Manhattan, you also operate in Brooklyn. Can mm-hmm. you give us some basically advantages why also living in Brooklyn, apart from obviously maybe cost advantages, but also the attractiveness? Maybe you can even give us a little bit of an overview regarding neighborhoods within Brooklyn, like micro mm-hmm. neighborhoods, which might be interesting for someone who might consider to move there. Because I know Brooklyn is like, you always have these neighborhoods, but than knowing particularly in itself, like what is right now interesting or less interesting.
Yeah. So I lived in Manhattan when I first moved here and then moved over to Brooklyn, and I'm very happy with that change. What I think is a very common misconception is so many people, especially that like only live, have only ever lived in Manhattan, they view Brooklyn as like so far away, when in actuality, it's like maybe 1 to 2 extra subway stops. So it's not, it does, it adds like 5 minutes to your commute versus like what you're thinking it's going to add 20. And so Brooklyn's pretty, pretty wonderful. It all depends on whatever vibe you want. Like Williamsburg, that area is more like trendy, stuff like that. Downtown Brooklyn, when you walk around there, it kind of just feels like you're in Manhattan, like you're surrounded by like taller buildings again, and it's like very built up. Dumbo is very popular. It's actually very popular for people that are moving in from out of town, because it's like the area in Brooklyn that I think is like one of the most well known, as well as Williamsburg. But then it's kind of interesting because Dumbo borders on another neighborhood called Brooklyn Heights, and Dumbo is for like, you see a lot of parents with a kid moving in there. But then it's kind of funny because then eventually when they have their second kid and they start growing a family, that's when they move up the hill over to Brooklyn Heights, because that's, that vibe is more of like townhouse line streets and like more of like a neighborhood feel. So yeah.
I see. I'm just having a look at the map. That's interesting that you mentioned Dumbo. Mm-hmm. As you say, might not have any impact regarding commute, but price-wise, it does, basically.
Yeah. Well, price-wise, Dumbo is, I think, the most expensive in Brooklyn, and then probably narrowly followed by Brooklyn Heights. But because of those areas being as great or being like really wonderful to live in, Clinton Hill, Fort Greene, Gowanus, like all of those areas that kind of border all the neighborhoods that I've talked about are also extremely popular. I've only really worked as far in Brooklyn as Crown Heights, and it's been really great to see that neighborhood gradually like grow over the past year as I've been like regularly going there, because you just watch like new buildings like or building owners buy a place and like either gut renovate it or just like completely do it over. And yeah, so I think that's going to be an area that will be very popular.
Makes total sense. Now coming from rentals to purchases and buying residential, can you give us a market overview on two-bedroom average price apartment in that area? Maybe not necessarily Dumbo, but Brooklyn overall, also maybe in comparison to Manhattan.
I don't have those figures off the top of my head when it comes to like a two-bedroom. I will say that like for the most part, units in Manhattan tend to be pretty steep. Like for $500,000, you have options. However, the thing with New York real estate is because there are so many places that are like there's so many high rises, so they're very like built up. You have two different types of apartments that you could buy, which is either a condo or a co-op. And so condos mean like you actually get a deed and it's considered like real property. You take out a mortgage when you're buying it. Like that's a condo. A co-op is technically like a certificate, like a stock certificate. And so you take out a personal loan when you buy it, and they tend to have like more rules and regulations. And it's not considered real property, which is why you have to take out a personal loan versus a mortgage. And so because of that, co-ops are always cheaper.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. However, the apartment type or the unit type is can be basically both a studio or an apartment.
So a studio would just be an apartment. It's just more so like the building type and how it's structured. Like
I'm very sure that for you as Americans it's a very ignorant question, but for me, I have come across those labels several times. And now since you mentioned that, I would really like to understand that. So basically, we have the co-op, which can be the same unit type as a condo.
Mm-hmm.
However, it is just legally a different category.
Yeah, they have to be in different buildings. So there's either a co-op building or a condo building. Mm-hmm. And so if you're looking at a studio apartment in a co-op versus a studio apartment in a condo, you're going to pay more for the condo because it's real property and there tend to be less hoops to jump through.
I understand. But again, let's say I go to the listing page and then I check it out, and then it definitely is labeled condo or co-op. Yep. Basically, on the apartment type itself, I couldn't distinguish them. It's the same. It can look the same from like, yes. But it's like, it's just labeled differently. It's just categorized differently. And what is then the price difference between those ones on average? Do you say, okay, basically you see a 20% markup on a condo versus a co-op, or is it 50% discount on a co-op versus a condo? How much basically is the price difference?
It can be pretty drastic. Again, when I ran those searches before we talked to make sure I was ready for it, currently on the market, there are like almost 600 co-ops that are under $500,000. Meanwhile, there are only 40 condos that are under $500,000. So like there's a huge difference.
Is there still a possibility to get a loan if I go to the bank and say, hey, you know, I know officially I don't get a mortgage on it, but I really want to go for this co-op. Like, can you still give me money?
Yes. That's just when it's a personal loan versus a mortgage. So sometimes, like, because you get a stock certificate rather than a deed, occasionally, like, the bank might even be the one that's holding on to that stock certificate for, like, as collateral for the loan. But yes, you can still take out a loan to buy.
And I still get the same interest. I have to pay interest, obviously. Do I get the same interest rate on it, or is it also the interest rate is different?
I am not 100% positive on that. I think that would also depend on, like, the bank that you end up going through, and whatever deal you can end up negotiating there.
Very interesting. Before, you mentioned paperwork for tenants. You're a tenant focused. You work with tenants. Can you give me an overview of all the pre-qualification documents which a tenant needs to provide, which helps you to qualify the tenant? And maybe sometimes you also need to say, hey, you know, this is not right. Like, please improve this one in order to improve your eligibility or your chance in order to get this unit.
Yeah. So for sales, in order to view anything, we would just want like a pre-approval loan or a pre-approval letter from the bank saying like, hey, we'll give you this amount. And then that's enough to at least start getting the ball rolling before you put in an offer. But for rentals, that's when you like really need to make sure you like have your paperwork prepared. So in order to qualify for an apartment, your income needs to be 40 times the rent. So if you are looking at like if you make 80 grand a year, you can qualify for like a $2,000 apartment. And if you, let's say you make 80 grand a year, but you wanted to get a $3,000 apartment, you actually would need what's called a guarantor. And that is an individual that makes 80 times the rent, and they're essentially like co-signing with you. And so that's also when like it can get tricky when it comes to like the management companies, because some of them like require that person to be an individual that lives in the city. Meanwhile, others will allow people, but only from certain states. Or some of them will actually require you to use like a third party guarantor service, which like that company itself charges 1 month rent in order to use the services. But like they want it as like this rent will get paid type of backup. And then for like actual paperwork, you need pay stubs to prove it, bank accounts to prove you have the money to even close. You need a signed letter on official letterhead from your employer stating like how long you've worked there, and what your salary is, and credit report. Yep.
Okay, so it's easier to get married.
Yes, it is. It is a lot.
Okay, is it also easier to own weapons than this? Maybe.
Not in New York, but in a lot of states, yes, but not in New York. New York is very, very blue. So.
Okay. Is that all legally based, or is it literally like there's no room for discussion and negotiation? It is what it is, and this is stated, and you have to definitely have the 40 respectively, the 40 times, or if you don't, you need to have the guarantor.
It's pretty standard. The only exception would be if you like actually met with the building owner and you were able to like negotiate a deal that way. But most buildings are run by a management company. And so you're just like kind of checking off boxes on an application.
How many times does it happen that a potential tenant doesn't comply to the 40 times one and they are reliant on the guarantor?
It's very common.
Okay.
Yeah, so guarantors are pretty widely accepted because it is so common.
Okay. That's actually an indication that the market is a bit off now, that we definitely, the prices are way too high, and also like maybe the legal requirements haven't really responded to the market dynamics.
Mm-hmm.
And then I assume all those documents you have to get notarized. You have to make sure that they're proper. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. You hand them in to you as an agent, and then you make sure that you conducted the diligence and you talk to the potential tenant, and then mm-hmm. you process them. You have potentially systems and software. You can submit them, or you know where to go, and you hand them over to the respective mm-hmm. person, mainly obviously the property manager or the owner, and mm-hmm. then go from there. Is that correct, or how does it work?
Yep. I would always review their documents to make sure that everything's in line, and to let them know, hey, you actually need to like maybe if you don't have enough in your checking to show that you have the funds for closing, then like I would say, hey, do you have a savings account that you can also like provide a document for, so that way they know that you have the money to close, like type of an ordeal. And then every management company is different, but we would submit it after that.
What for tips do you have for someone who's looking for a room or an apartment to make sure that he or she gets something proper?
Mm-hmm. I would say it's all a numbers game. So really you just need to get out there and like start doing your research and like sending out inquiries, and be very prepared when you send out the inquiries, like introduce yourself, move in date, ask any questions you might have, and then end with saying like, okay, so when can I come see the unit? Like, or, you know, are you available this weekend for me to come see it? Something like that, because it can be very hard to get responses to some listings, unfortunately. So that's, again, why it's a numbers game. You just have to try as many as possible.
You also do commercial. Give us an overview of the market right now on commercial real estate in Manhattan, Brooklyn. Is there a common trend, a common line which you can draw on prices?
Mm-hmm. So for commercial, it is kind of all over the map, and it depends on the building and the location and all of that. It is definitely a tenant's market when it comes to commercial real estate, where you hold more of the cards, and that's when like the fun of negotiation like really comes in, where it's like, okay, well, this is what I want, and they're willing to sign like a 5-10 year lease. So like, you know, like you're gonna want that long term tenant. And yeah, so I have been working a lot in Crown Heights, and so when I was looking for one client in particular, for the same amount of space, you could be paying like $6,000 in one building, but then like $12,000 in another. And one is like a new build, and so it's got like more natural light, but then the other one, you're getting like an extra 500 square feet. It just doesn't have the amount of windows, and because of that, it is a drastic price difference.
Maybe that implies that tenants are more have more power and therefore are more delicate in what they want, and they want to have like maybe the fresher young space and not necessarily the bigger, more clunky.
Yeah, and I feel like that's especially the case in commercial. So you want to make sure that that's like a nice space that they're seeing. For a lot of the other not so photogenic commercial spaces, those are better for services that you don't really have clients coming to your space and you just need a lot of room in order to get your work done.
Got it. Do you also have an overview on places like WeWork and other co-working spaces? Is it right now as difficult for them as in a normal commercial, or has it even right now a more of an uptake because the tenants don't want to commit for such a long-term lease?
There are actually some pretty good deals on co-working spaces because there are so many options out there now, and they are very much willing to work with you if you're willing to sign a lease. They're even willing to work with you if you're not willing to sign a long lease because they want people in their spaces.
Got it. Perfect. Makes sense. Now, I talked to Bill Barnes from Florida, and he said there's so many people moving from New York down to Miami. It's not important anymore if you're in New York or if you're in Miami. It's a lot of remote business going on, a lot of people working from home, tax advantages which you have in the state of Florida. What is your sensation there, which you see also maybe during the summer? Do you just see like a certain turnover, people, yes, moving, but then also people coming in, or what is the situation there?
There's definitely a lot of people coming and also a lot of people going. I think that that's just kind of always the beauty of New York. And when you mention like the remote work, that is very true. But then that just leads to a lot of people that live anywhere else that work remotely. And they're like, I've always wanted to move to New York. And now I have the opportunity because I work remotely. And like, that's what I did. I'm originally from Michigan. And when I had a fully remote job, I just kind of like took a long weekend one weekend and told my bosses like, hey, moving to New York. So like, you know, it didn't matter to them because I was still going to log on Monday morning and like do the same job that I had been doing. But yeah, I had the freedom to go wherever.
It's interesting. There's always like a certain, and everyone has a different reason why to move somewhere else and why to leave the current city. Regarding transactions, we talked a lot about renting, also regarding commercial and residential. Regarding transactions, right now, what is basically the purchasing process for someone who wants to buy, who wants to go for a unit in terms of residential? What does he or she have to take into account? Sorry.
Definitely pre-bake in some time because it's not a particularly quick process. It can be a quick process once you actually get approved and everything, then that starts like a 30 to 45 day type of timeline. However, the act of like finding a unit that will work for you and then putting in that offer and getting it all approved, that could take some time, especially because in New York, there is like when you're buying or selling, there is a lawyer on both sides. And so they have to be involved with the contract. So like there are just some extra hoops to jump through. And then also like there's co-op board approval. So like you need to submit like a full package of a lot of different information. Like some of them require like multiple personal references and stuff like that. So just gathering all of that paperwork, getting it approved, can take some time.
Interesting. What is basically the timeline which you normally would account for on average in order to make like from, okay, I definitely, or I think I'm going to go for this apartment or for this unit. Let's start with the purchasing process until closing. How long does it take?
So if you've already found a unit and started putting together like the contract, then it can just be like a couple months. Like maybe like 2 months or so. It just depends on how long the board ends up taking to approve you. Sometimes getting that scheduled can be one of like the longest aspects, is even when you're renting from a co-op board, the renters need to meet with the board. I have friends that applied for an apartment at the beginning of June and they got it, like the owner of the apartment approved it. However, they don't even have the co-op board approval meeting until the 10th of July. So like over a month after them finding and applying, and that's just for them renting. So that's why, that's always why like you want to bake in extra time, like start probably like 6 months before you hope to move, just to make sure that nothing ends up happening. And also it's a common thing where the person that you're buying the unit from could be renting it out. So, you know, if you're trying to buy it now in July, but then they have a renter through Christmas, then like, you know, you kind of need to wait till that lease runs out.
It sounds that there's definitely the necessity of having a broker like you mm-hmm. only taking care of the client side. Because again, I think the likelihood that I get married is higher than I get an apartment if I had to do everything on my own.
Yes.
What are processes and maybe also your tips to someone else when really considering to buy a unit? Like as a client, I say, mm-hmm. I'm interested, I would like to go for something. What would you suggest someone who is interested and really committed to buy a certain unit in Manhattan or in Brooklyn?
I would say patience and figuring out exactly what you want, and ask questions if you are unclear about anything, because that is probably like one of the biggest things where just people don't know. And so I know there's the problem of not even knowing what questions to ask, but I'm pretty good about reading nonverbal. So like if someone is hesitating a bit, like I'll be like, okay, what's going on in your brain to like, what can I do? What information can I give you to help smooth that over?
Makes total sense. You introduced a good topic, and it's a good segue to talk a little bit about your service offerings. What is it what you're doing, and also what is your brokerage doing? What is it basically that you say, okay, this is also the reason why you chose Oxford Property Group and not someone else to work for?
So I chose Oxford Property Groups because I wanted to be my own independent agent. I wanted to essentially run my own company, be my boss, do everything that I want to do. And Oxford is one of those agencies that allows you to do that. And they don't have like a minimum. They don't have a maximum. They are one of the top 10 largest in New York. So they have plenty of resources for you. And so that's really why I ended up choosing them. So that way I could build my own brand while using them as like a brokerage to back me.
Makes total sense. And right now, regarding basically your service offerings as Haley, what do you think you're really good at and you think you can really like have experienced right now that you got like testimonials, you got like some references, some clients saying, mm-hmm. you know what, so appreciative that we worked with you and so helpful for having like on the one hand, maybe professionalism, but also like this customized approach?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I've heard so many complaints about realtors here. And every complaint that I take, that even if it's not geared towards me, I take that and I think of, okay, well, how can I be the type of agent that would not have received that complaint? Like, how can I be the agent that they wanted to have? And so I try and be as responsive as possible, give them as much information as possible, and really being thorough, because there are a lot of people that are not thorough. I'm thorough to the point where if you are moving from out of state and you don't really know the neighborhoods, then I'm like, okay, well, what kind of energy do you want from your neighborhood? Because then that can help me like lead you in different directions. And then, you know, I'll tell you whether or not like, okay, well, this is realistic or not, or we'll still go for it, but like, just don't get your hopes up on X, Y, and Z. Like, I try and be as optimistic, but also real with them as possible.
Makes total sense. And I believe that having exactly like this pushback from someone who guides you and makes sure that you're not like sloppy and, you know, you're just doing things not correctly, I think is exactly what someone expects from a professional real estate agent. How do you keep track on, let's say you have many clients in the pipeline, you have a lot of processes, mm-hmm. you just mentioned they take a couple of months sometimes. How do you keep track of all these different clients with all the needs, with all the elements which you have to take care of?
To-do lists, folders on my Gmail, my work calendar, all of these things. I have a work cell phone and a personal cell phone, and I have a to-do list with notifications on both. So I'm like getting double buzzed on certain things. You know, just I want to make sure that if someone reaches out to me, they don't feel like it just fell on deaf ears. Like I want them to know that like I did take whatever they sent me and provide them some form of information, or at least lead them in the right direction if I can't help them.
Got it. Looking back 12 months now, basically, can you give us a quick in-between verdict and summary of how would you call it if you had to put a title on these last 12 months and describe it somehow?
It's been a very like fun and eye-opening roller coaster. Definitely plenty of highs and also a number of lows, but it's been, I don't know, like getting to start essentially my own business has been really fun, and it's been a great way and a great reason to go out and do a bunch of stuff and meet a bunch of people that I would have never done or met before. Like one of the things that I started when I became an agent was I started a meetup group here as a way to like meet more people for potential clients. And I started this in October, like mid-October, and I didn't know what type of event to do. So I just said, like, it's called New Friends NYC. That's my group name. And then I created an event for like middle of November to like go on Sunday afternoon and like meet at the Met and like walk around. And that event blew up to the point where like 600 people ended up RSVPing. Only like a little over 100 showed up. And I say only a little over 100 showed up. Yeah. And so I started sending them in. It was, especially considering I had never really run events before. Then all of a sudden I'm like, okay, so I'm just like, now I'm just standing on the Met steps waiting for strangers to come up and like greet me, which is also like a very weird, it was a weird experience, but also like very rewarding. And I haven't hosted any events yet this summer, especially because I try and plan them like a month out. And with my schedule being what it is, I can't dedicate like basically a whole day to doing one of these events a month in advance when weekends tend to be so busy with real estate. But like my group has almost 5,200 members. So like anytime I do post an event, it goes out to a lot of people.
How did you get so many members?
I think that it's because of the keywords that I ended up choosing. I think, like, I genuinely, I do not know.
Okay, because I tell you, I tried to, I am owner or co-host of a meetup, mm-hmm. and I did like two meetups, and it was me and the beer. That's the people who showed up. So I don't know, maybe that's like exactly the angle you should take. Like if I was so successful on meetup, I would do one meetup every week. But
there's so many things that are in my pipeline to do. And so my goal is to figure out what I can do with my meetup. And so another thing that I do is I interview local businesses for the West Village for a community site that I run there. And so I've met some pretty great business owners there, which has helped make connections for me to host certain meetups. And so my goal is to get back into that, like when the fall hits, and like, because then I'll have more time to dedicate to it.
Makes total sense. What could you give for a tip to someone who wants to start real estate and his or her real estate career in New York City?
My biggest advice would be both social media and also like just networking by getting out there in person. Like if you're a remotely personable person, just really lean into that. And yeah, like that's been really like the biggest thing for me, has been my personality and just putting it out there to anybody and everybody.
Perfect. I know your time is limited and we are about to wrap up. What are some final words from your side? Something you would like to share, which we haven't covered, and you think is valuable to our international audience?
While there might be a lot of hoops to jump through when it comes to like moving here or anything like that, I can tell you that New York's pretty much a love it or hate it place. And if you're one of the people that love it, then it is 100% worth it.
Perfect. I love it. Thank you so much, Haley. I really appreciate our conversation. I learned again so much about New York City, about also Dumbo. I've never heard about this area in Brooklyn. Thank you so much for this one. Looks actually very, very exciting and very interesting. You also gave a very good overview on the market right now, market overview, prices from the residential in terms of renting towards also the prices of buying, entire process, due diligence from obtaining a room or co-op or a condo, all the process which you have to go to just rent, and then also all the process, the entire process you have to go through when you want to buy. You also gave us a very interesting insights on jumping into real estate, on why you chose this brokerage, and also the bumpy road, which I really appreciate that you also don't sell it more nicer than it is. It is. I've heard many times that it's a very hard time, and I really sent you a lot of energy regarding these first months, and I think you've already like overcome the biggest hurdles. And basically also your final words, I really appreciate that you shared this one around New York City. You either hate it or love it. So I appreciate it. I really thank you for your time, and thank you so much for being guest on my show. We talk soon for sure. We stay in contact, and I send the best regards to New York City.
Thank you so much for having me.
Bye-bye.
It's been a pleasure. Bye.